Greg, this is my recollection of Elliott Ness for the most part. Robert Stack and the Untouchables.
Oh, yeah.
For many years. Fighting the crime with the Al Capone and all those groups. But I don't know when it was that I learned that there was a second act in Elliott Ness's career, and that was right here in Cleveland, Ohio. And there's a new book called American Demon, Elliott Ness and the Hunt for America's Jack the Ripper. It's author Daniel Sashauer, award-winning author, joining us this morning. Daniel, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I love hearing that theme.
Right? It reminds me of that show, and different than the one with Sean Connery and Kevin Costner, which is sort of a different generation of people remembering Elliott Ness. What's your recollection or reason that you kind of decided Elliott Ness would be a good subject to follow in a new book?
Well, you know, we think of Ness, as you said, as a Chicago guy. Wrigley Field, deep dish pizza. Elliott Ness. It's where all the drama with Al Capone and the Untouchables played out, but that chapter of Ness's career was brief, and it was pretty much wrapped up by the time he was 30 years old. So what does he do for a second act? He moves to Cleveland. That just fascinated me.
How did that come about? Was he just looking for work? Did he have relatives? Did people say, or, you know, somebody says, well, your reputation, we need you to be our, what is it, safety or public safety director, I guess, right?
He landed a job as director of public safety. This position put him in charge of the entire police department and the fire department and a whole lot more. It was a big, big promotion. So big, in fact, that a lot of people assumed he'd fall flat on his face. In Chicago with the Untouchables, he'd been in charge of a handful of guys, and now he's in charge of thousands of city employees in one of America's biggest cities. And what's more, he's the youngest person ever to hold the position. And he's going to have a real struggle to live up to his own reputation.
Let's go right to September 5th, then, of 1934, when the Lady of the Lake surfaces. Daniel, tell us a little bit about that.
That happened even before Elliott Ness came on the scene. And Cleveland appeared to be suffering from this wave of absolutely brutal killings. Each of the victims appeared to have been beheaded, some, it seemed, while still alive. And the remains had been expertly dismembered in most cases and scattered across the city. So in the case you're talking about near Euclid Beach, a man's walking along the shore trying to collect driftwood. He comes across a headless torso, half buried in the sand, or kids would all but trip over severed limbs. A skull would pop up in a tin can at a city dump, and each atrocity touched off a cycle of fear and outrage and calls for action. The headlines were screaming with headlines: "The Mad Butcher Strikes Again." Who is this mad torso killer? Each time, as you can imagine. It captured the attention of the city and spread all across the country.
At what point was he sort of full in on this and trying to solve this? And what were the roadblocks that were coming upon him? Because this is, at this point, we still think this is still left as an unsolved case. Even here we are in 2022.
Well, the Ness from television would have strapped on his holster and kicked down some doors, but the real Elliott Ness was now in Cleveland as the director of public safety. I mean, the chief of police reports to him. It's important to remember Ness wasn't a homicide detective any more than he was a fireman or a crossing guard. People didn't expect him to do the day-to-day work, but this is Elliott Ness we're talking about here. People wanted action. They wanted heroics. He had made a point of saying that he would lead from the front lines in Cleveland. And over time, as the pattern of these crimes became evident, he had to step in. So he put together a team in the mold of the Untouchables, and for the most part, they worked outside the system and under the radar, trying to get information off of the criminal grapevine. And that's not to say he ignored the official effort. He devoted extra resources and manpower. The police put on a full-court press trying to catch this killer. But Ness, as was typical of him, also was running his own investigation on the side. He said, "I want to do all I can. I want to see this psycho caught."
What information were you able to gather, mostly from newspaper or other archival type of things that kind of gave you insight into what he was doing as opposed to maybe what the police were doing at that time?
You know, you don't have to scratch the surface very hard on any given day to find out where Elliott Ness was. He was very good at keeping himself in the newspapers. He often alerted reporters when he was going to be raiding a gambling parlor or knocking down an illegal liquor operation. But in this case, the information, the breadcrumbs are fairly hard to gather because he was working very, very much off the radar and trying to keep things quiet so as not to get out in front of his own investigation. But he and his team narrowed in on a suspect they liked for the crime, a suspect they identified for a while only as Dr. X.
We've heard over time in other different books that come out, they thought maybe there has to be some sort of surgical abilities or something just because of the way the dismemberment was done, I believe, as well. At what point did they stop? After was he still around when they stopped? What was the transitional period when it realized that there was not going to be a suspect or somebody held accountable for this?
The investigation continued for years and years after the crimes appeared to have come to a close. But there are a lot of people, including Detective Peter Merlot on the Cleveland Police Force, who believe that the killer hadn't stopped, but had in fact just moved on, was broadening his base of operations outside the center of Cleveland. These are details of the case that are going to be argued until the end of time. Where Elliot Ness was concerned, it was enough that the crimes in Cleveland had stopped.
What did this do to his career or his luster, I guess, as it would be, when he moved on to maybe another part or something?
He did. You know, we pay so much attention to what he accomplished in Chicago because of the Untouchables and the fantastic story that surrounds that, that the miracle that he wrought here in Cleveland is often overlooked. He came here. His job description, his marching orders, were to clean up a police department that was basically rotting from within because of corruption, and also to break the stranglehold that the mob had over the city at that time. So, you know, no big deal. Clean up the police force, take down the mob. And the wonder of it all is the degree to which he succeeded. His timing was terrific, as one of his reporter friends wrote of him. The city had seldom needed a hero so badly.
The book is called American Demon, Elliot Ness and the Hunt for America's Jack the Ripper. Daniel Stashower, our guest this morning. It's a chance for you to kind of look at Elliot Ness from a different perspective as well. From that beginning part, when did you learn that you had some relatives in some of Ness's files?
Oh, my goodness. Ness's papers are here in Cleveland. And I was paging through one day, and a familiar face jumped out at me. It was my grandfather, Fred Stashower. Now, believe me, I thought I must have dozed off. I thought it must be a mistake. I'd love to be able to tell you that my grandfather was a bootlegger or a bank robber, but it turns out that he crossed paths with Ness about once a year at a political roast, you know, sort of like the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was called the Anvil Review, and my grandfather, came to find out, was a cast member, and Ness was a frequent target. And apparently Ness enjoyed it. There's a photo of him with his hand pressed to his forehead, laughing at a joke at his own expense. The guy was an untouchable, but apparently he could take a joke.
Absolutely. Wow, great. Well, Daniel, we appreciate your time this morning and get people to take a look at this, American Demon, Elliot Ness, and the Hunt for America's Jack the Ripper. Thanks for sharing with us today.
Thanks so much, guys.